Digital Salon Season 3.
Who would have thought 12 years ago that Horton Plaza would one day look like this?
A family-friendly mall turned into a murder scene. Two cousins shot, one of them killed. Search for the gunman.
We have some breaking news right now at Horton Plaza around the Victoria's Secret. Police found a burglar inside the Victoria's Secret this morning. A security guard about 30 minutes ago called police and said they had footage of somebody crashing through the roof.
Right now, police are on the hunt for the gunman who killed a man and shot his cousin at Horton Plaza. Good evening, I'm Vanessa Van Hefty. 10 News military reporter Hannah Mullen spoke to a veteran about all the chaos right outside of a comedy club. Hannah.
Okay, friends, this is an audio story. Well, actually, it's more of an audio labyrinth, perhaps in honor of its subject. It's a story about Horton Plaza, a place in the middle of downtown San Diego that wasn't initially the city center. Barely 20 years before Alonzo Horton imagined and built his hotel and pseudo-public square, establishing a U.S. city center, what we would logically call downtown was but 3 miles northwest, and it was Mexico. What if the story of Horton Plaza was about that dialectic of power? Okay, now keep that in your brain, and let us get into it. So in 2019, my colleague Jason and I, hello Jason.
Hola Felipe.
So we got captivated by, as silly as it may sound, a shopping mall. Yeah, we really got caught in it, like in a labyrinth.
You know, I have to say there's something really appropriate about using the word labyrinth. It's actually kind of Jurdian.
Jason is referencing here the late Venice, California-based architect John Jurdy. He was a postmodern architect who had just become quite famous for his design of the LA Olympics venue. And he was also a pretty controversial fellow. Many questioned his impulse to try to create a so-called public space within private retail projects. So there was this mall in downtown San Diego that was unlike the others.
And we have to admit, Philip, we grew up in the suburbs. And when you grow up in the suburbs, you always want to explore. And when you explore, you think about what's the nearest kind of the downtown, right? And what downtown offered for young people, family-friendly options, there were two, Seaport Village. There was Horton Plaza. Looking back, of course, there was a lot more going on than met the eye, including the larger redevelopment of the Gaslamp Quarter, and this was a space that was not destined for young people like you and I, Philip. We weren't supposed to go to the Gaslamp Quarter. As we got older, though, we explored downtown in a more interesting and exciting way. We started to encounter places like Pokey's on 10th and E, Mexican eatery, and sipping coffee and tea at Bassam's at 4th and Market. And actually, it's amazing. Remember, people used to still smoke. They were still smoking inside at Bassam's back then.
That's true. Probably what us as well. So this mall, it was unique. It was, in the end, of course, a shopping center, a place where folks came to buy, linger, and sometimes watch a movie or a play at the Lyceum, a theater venue nested in its underground. But Jurdy, in all his whimsy, designed it like a kind of cartoon of a European city, with all the eras of architecture collapsed onto each other. It was an explosion of pastel colors and crisscrossing walkways, halls, colonnades, escalators that played tricks on you. There was something about hearkening back to an Italian hill town, but more like one drawn by a kid that maybe saw a picture once and had their way with it. But for our story, what's important is that it was built as a part of a process to redevelop and, so to say, revitalize downtown San Diego in the 80s. But in order to do so, an entire neighborhood was razed, and many people and businesses were displaced. And now in 2016, it was itself dying, or at least that's what we were reading and hearing in the news. Basically, we started to hear more and more stories about how dangerous it was down there and how there was theft and murderous types roaming about. I mean, it was all pretty noir, really. And I think it's also important to mention that these stories coincided with the city's growing houseless population.
Your description of the pastels. And I was also thinking of the parking garage. I'm sorry, I just had to say it because the crisscrossing parking garage. And how did you find yourself, you know, were you vegetable or fruit? And of course, they were all mislabeled anyway. We didn't really know what a vegetable or a fruit was. Anyway, so we embarked on a project to document what we felt were essentially the last moments of Horton Plaza before its destruction and subsequent transition. We might call it, I guess, a conversion. Into what's now being called the campus at Horton. But back then, at the end of 2017, there was a form of odd pleasure walking through this ruin. It was sort of like a postmodern equivalent of walking through the Agora in Athens or the Colosseum in Rome, except you didn't have to pay for it. Sort of destruction that everyone anticipated, but everyone was too scared to touch what that really meant. It was already a sort of hollowed ground like the Whaley House, a sort of local spot, also 3 miles northwest in Old Town. And again, I don't know what the future of the Whaley House will be. But maybe I'm giving too much credit to John Jurdy. But he did seem to guess that the ultimate expression of our cherished heritage was something intensely amnesia-based. It was like an amnesiatic violence.
You mean like there's something violent about pushing away something into being forgotten?
That's exactly what I mean. And this amnesiatic violence is such... it's so a la mode right now. And to Jurdy's credit, it was an unsuspecting success, Horton Plaza. It really was a structure that followed through from its initial ideation and conception. It seemed to have been built for people like you and I, for us, for that generation of us. But of course, we're smart enough and we know that an us is not easily categorized, and that the creative social sciences attempt ethnographies of the future, and by meaning the ethnographies of the past. Still, the mall's stuccoed facades and postmodern silhouettes were familiar to you and I. They felt comfortable. We felt at home. But it wasn't just us. It wasn't just those of us in San Diego, but this place was felt around the world. Your Polish grandmother visited also in the 80s. In addition to this sort of question of postmodernity, we were also interested in how the story was being reported in real time in the mid-2010s. We were intrigued by how the story was about of its destruction. There was this sense that instead of simply recognizing that the clock of redevelopment had toned, as it had in previous moments over the course of the 20th century, but again, curiously, it seemed as if, again, we needed the community to be convinced of the mall's decrepitude and that it was a threat. It posed a serious threat to community safety. It's impossible. I mean, really, architectural mall being a threat to public safety, it's kind of crazy, no? And though our exhibit, and this exhibit that we made just before the pandemic in 2019, November 2019, that was actually at the moment of celebrating the fall of the Berlin Wall, we were also thinking about that, we didn't exactly address what we're now thinking about. And it became clear to us that we needed to think more about this community's schizophrenic desire for the latest fad, for the latest repetition. Of course, there will always be fads and repetitions, but here, the intervention of the campus at Horton, it felt gratuitously amnesiatic. The history of a city might benefit from living with and engaging in its mistakes so as to build a palimpsest that serves the community, meaning ruins should not always be gotten rid of.
So, okay, so let's figure out where we're at. We have a dying mall, then it's shut down, and all the, you know, riffraff is pushed out. And now they ripped out its innards and on its bones built back basically the same thing. But it's got a new name. It's painted white. It's not a Euro city, but a biotech mecca a la mode. And the cost, well, it cost quite a bit of money. But essentially, it's the same thing. Hence, the banality of redevelopment. Now, I know that this is a phrase that may cause some confusion.
We're not just trying to parrot a phrase that might get clicks or to be controversial. The phrasing is very sincere, and we want to think deeply about the violence, the urban violence, not just in terms of people, but also in terms of built space. The way we tell stories about built space is often about transactions. These are stories that are scripted and played out, and they leave out profound problems of our city. They leave out the people of our city. They leave out the divisions that can be overcome, but there's a huge amount of capital, both literal and figurative, that undergird our malaise. And we are in a moment where we hope not to repeat, but to take up the task of doing something truly different. We want to think about what's ahead.
And I think also, you know, the fear is that in the end, it feels like a kind of fake chance for something better.
The old Horton Plaza, once a gathering place for panhandlers, is now a clean, attractive park. And most of the transients are now centered in areas away from the new shopping center. The man who has led redevelopment for the last 8 years believes they will blend in and have little impact.
We expect 25 to 30,000 people a day coming through Horton Plaza, and I'm not sure the transients are going to be quite as obvious.
All the shoppers we talk with agree. They believe the new shopping center is revitalizing downtown, and there seems to be less concern about being hassled or bothered by transients.
I think with the protection down here and the security, there isn't going to be a problem.
That clip we just heard sounds kind of recent, but in fact it was from the 1980s. It was in a 1980s news interview. And so it looks like the quote-unquote transient problem, as was described in this, has been around a lot longer than we might suspect. Housing, it seems, isn't a new problem. And while we were doing all of this work, documenting and thinking about this important city space, the Agora, the marketplace, the mall, we also started to think about many other aspects of a city and what it needs. And one of those was also a thought about historical documentation. And we were lucky enough to come across an article by a local historian, Richard Amaro, who wrote a lengthy piece called Horton Plaza Park, Where People Meet and Opposites Collide. This article is essentially a chronological recounting of the space we know now as Horton Plaza and the park. And that park actually has an incredibly interesting history.
So it's basically a list of things that have happened in that square since Alonzo Horton first had the idea for it in 1870. And going down the list, we were blown away. It was as if the story we were seeing take place today had been repeating itself for the last 150 years. From its beginnings, there was a kind of push and pull between creating a space where people could linger, a kind of, well, we keep saying this, but I think that that's the theme here, a Euro city center, and then controlling who could or couldn't be a lingerer or maybe a loiterer. And another point is that it started in private hands, and most of that area remains in private hands. There are some details to that, but overall, I mean, we can really work with that. And there was another point that struck us. It had to do with this concept of loitering. an aside here, it makes me laugh a lot that the only place where loitering is allowed to happen in the Anglo-Saxon setting is the mall, of course, like where the mall rats linger. But it seems that what was taking place in that square was a kind of process of making San Diego a white, well-off, English-speaking city. I mean, imagine, just about 20 years before Horton Plaza was conceived, California wasn't even a state. There's this moment in Amaro's text. Actually, Jason, can you read it really fast, this fragment?
Yes, I would absolutely love to. And here it is. Amaro starts, quote, "The San Diego Union, July 9th, 1907, began noticing people in the plaza rather than the plaza itself. The cacophony of tongues was too much for the editor. He concluded a series of sarcastic remarks about the intelligence and morality of the speakers with the ambivalent question, 'But speech is free. One will hope and trust that it always will be. Nevertheless, would not San Diego be better off if there were less of it on the plaza? Is the plaza being put to its best possible use?'" End quote.
And this question comes up again and again throughout the history of that space. One particularly interesting account is a situation that comes up in 1986 on the grounds of Jurdy's Horton Plaza. What happened was a local theater company allegedly wanted to stage a performative protest against war in Central America at the mall. The company was called Playing for Real Theater. I mean, a kind of great name in the vein of these kind of postmodern noir themes that we keep bringing up. But the mall subsequently filed a restraining order against the company and then thwarted their attempt to stage their protest. Now, there's a lot of fascinating details here, but one main point is this. This is no public square. It is private.
In thinking about Amaro's, in the spirit of Amaro's article, I think it's important that we also think about the various... Yes, so another example returns us to the moment that Amaro was describing and what I read earlier just a few minutes ago. It was... just a few years after that same sarcastic remark from the San Diego Union editor, that we have a pretty famous incident in the history of San Diego, namely the free speech fight of 1912. Amaro comments on it in his history, as do others at the time, including the famous anarchist in her memoir, My Life, Emma Goldman, who, along with her partner, Ben Reitman, took part in protesting the city's ordinance. And this is a quote of what the ordinance did. Quote, "It prohibited street speaking between C and F streets on the north and south, and 4th and 6th streets on the west and east." It's amazing. The location is right there, right at the center of what we're talking about. Perhaps it's a little bit adjacent to Horton Plaza Mall, but it's right there. Right there where we now think about Horton Plaza and the northern half of what we call the Gaslamp Quarter. The free speech fight has so many interesting details, and I encourage everyone to go and look and do their own research about this incredible event in San Diego history that connects to other fights across the country and across probably the world at this particular moment. But suffice it to say that freedom to speak publicly has always been a debatable right, and it takes courageous people to advocate for its legal possibility.
So what we have here is a place, namely our city center, that is braided with a history of control. And redevelopment is a part of that narrative. Redevelopment comes in as a tool to take back control, and of course, profit.
So now what we want to do is share with you a recent day when Philip and I had the opportunity to walk through, I guess it's around, the space formerly known as Horton Plaza, the soon-to-become campus at Horton. We met some very interesting people. They have incredible things to say to us, to share with us. They really opened up around the question of what it means to be in a city center and what it means to be in a place that is transforming before our very eyes. We wish we could live with ruins, but apparently we can't. So the best we have is to listen to the voices on the streets, voices of all kinds. Some of these voices discuss topics with language that could be offensive to some of our listeners. Still, we hope that these voices touch you as they touched us, as people who are hoping that the city will respond to what they are telling us, what they are hoping to communicate to us. We need more civic engagement. We need more voices. And we need more people walking the streets of the city.
Hello there. Question for you.
What, sir?
We are we're doing a project about downtown San Diego and kind of how things are developing here and just getting a kind of pulse of things. Would you mind talking to us a little bit about your experience out here?
What do you think, Steve? I'm on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Totally up to you. You know, what do you think? Should I give them my opinion of downtown? How shitty it's became in the last 3 years? Homeless are out of control.
You're still alive, Joe.
I'm still alive, right, Steve? I've been shining shoes downtown. I've owned Joey's Shoe Shine for 17 years.
Wow, congratulations.
I've been outside. Okay, this has been the worst 2 years that I've ever been out here. Actually, my wife doesn't want me to work outside downtown no more, because she's afraid it's not safe.
Really?
Well, you know, you got homeless guys walking around half naked and don't get arrested for it. You got guys getting eaten by bugs and harassing people and they don't get arrested for it. Cops don't even show up for it. You tell me. This project's been going on for 5 years.
Yeah. Do you remember when it was the Horton Plaza?
I was over there for 12 years.
You were there for 12 years.
I was out front of Horton Plaza for 12 years. I was up inside of Horton Plaza for 3 years. I've been out here for about 6. It was sad to see it get gone because a lot of people look for it. But at the same time, it was a death trap in there for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
People were getting mugged. Everything was going on.
Yeah.
That park was a disaster.
Yeah. That park has historically, right?
What, Steve?
Turned into a gangbanger haven.
Not only was it a gangbanger heaven, and he's lived downtown for 35 years. It was not only a gangbanger heaven, it was just a crime heaven.
Yeah.
You know, and there was no one there to stop it. You put a security company there to watch it, but they couldn't stop it because they weren't cops. You know, the vendors that were there left. The guy that had the ice cream cart, he left because his daughter got mugged.
It's amazing what we have going on here. Can you share a little about the inspiration behind this new development?
Well, absolutely, and it's actually several inspirations. First and foremost was to create that catalyst property, just like back in 85, that brought retail to an urban center that was pretty much Skid Row. We're looking to be that project that brings the retail back, but also jobs into the heart of San Diego. And at the same time, we also want our sustainability goals, to be able to do something the size of this property, 7 city blocks, 10 acres, in an urban environment that meets sustainability goals with solar, water treatment, all the things that people haven't been able to change. We want to show it's possible. And it's to really create a place that is community, that has the residents as well as the visitors that have a place. And that was why it was so important for us to get that lease with the city for the park in the front, really to make the streetscape, and it is a streetscape that connects the marina to the city center where people can dwell and enjoy and make it their own.
Hey guys.
Howdy, howdy.
Question for you.
You can ask me anything.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
My name's Philip.
Philip, my name is Jimmy.
Jimmy, nice.
Yep.
I'm going around town. I'm here with my colleague disappeared on me here, but
don't worry, I got your 6.
Okay.
You ain't got to worry about that.
Fair enough. But we're just trying to get a sense a little bit. We're also from San Diego and kind of getting a thermometer and the pulse downtown, what it is to be down here and live down here. I don't know if you wanted to share a little bit about your experience.
It's a little bit tough. I've been kicked in the face for nothing. It chipped my tooth. And it's a rough world, but it's not so untemperable that you can't stay here. So it's, everybody's coming here because of the warm weather and all of that sort of thing. Like, it's almost ideal weather. And it rains now and then. And sometimes you get wet, sometimes you don't. I've been wet. So, being that I, you know, live down here and I actually stay on the street, it's an amazing thing just to be able to change your underwear. It is so amazing. Like, that's what I had to do back here. Gotta find a place to hide just to change my underwear. And it's like, and then the next thing is, do you have money for underwear? Or do you find it on the street?
You have been such an influencer in downtown for many, many years, Jimmy. And we are wondering what you're excited about as far as what lifestyle opportunities the campus will bring to the community downtown.
Probably the greatest thing, if you want to talk lifestyle, if you want to talk about those things that make life special, and that's, I think, is a lot about community, but really is enhancing the theater environment that we have up here on Broadway with working with the Balboa, enhancing the entryway and the whole theater experience for the Lyceum, which is on our property, and then working with Speckles and Civic Theater, House of Blues, Symphony Hall, all those great moments that you get to share with your neighbors, family, and friends.
The urban downtown, exactly.
If they could change something downtown to make life a little easier for you, what would you say?
To be perfectly honest with you, I would say stop power washing. You're not doing anything except annoying the homeless and making the ground wet. So we can't lay down if we want to, you know, unless you're going to get soaking wet. But I would definitely change the power washing. It doesn't clean anything. There's still gum residue. There's still all kinds of garbage on the ground. It won't change anything. They're doing it for no reason, and they're wasting water doing it. And bleach. Let me tell you what, get bleach in your eyes.
What up, dope?
It's my homie, just got back from the hospital.
Okay. Were you around when the mall was still open?
Yes, I was.
Did you ever spend any time in there?
I did, and then I got kicked out because of the way I looked.
I'm not from California. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I've been here for about 5 years. I have been homeless since I've been here, about 30 days. And I would say, like, the craziest thing for me, especially being in the downtown area, is how you can have millionaires right next to bums. You know what I'm saying? And like, people that look like me, you know what I'm saying? Like, black people is a real small part out here. And most of the black people that I've been coming in contact with, not doing too well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed. It's changing a lot. I'm not sure if it's all for the better. There's so much homeless down here now, and it's just making it, it's not safe for a lot of people, even the tourists. So yeah, once the sun goes down, things change quite a bit, but even during the day, it's, you're just seeing more of it. So yeah, that's the biggest change I see.
You've been living in San Diego a long time?
Oh yeah, my whole life.
Whole life.
Yeah.
Us too.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but downtown is just, I work down here now. So, you know, during the day you think, oh, you know, because I work here and at the Civic and Yeah, so I get to see a lot.
By the same hallway,
yes.
Right?
Uh huh. Yeah. So yeah, just a lot of homeless. So yeah.
And do you think, I know that there's like a lot of hope for because the redevelopment of this work.
Right.
Complex. Do you think that is going to have any effect on any of that, or do you think?
I hope so. I mean, they actually do a really good job of like even the area up in the front. I don't know if you saw where the fountain is, yeah, and the grass park, and all, yeah, that. You know, they have people. They actually respect that pretty well, and they take care of it and stuff. So hopefully it'll continue. You know, but. Yeah.
Did you ever go to the mall before?
Oh yeah, yeah. I did. It's changed a lot. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's not even like, I don't even know if there's any shops open in there still. So it's just, yeah, kind of crazy. I mean, it was the latest thing when it first opened, and now I don't know. So yeah.
Things too.
to. Like, also, that was weird because she said, I don't even know if there's any shops open anymore in the mall. And I'm thinking, wait, there's no mall anymore. You know? So, I mean, she was very sweet, but that's also an interesting thing, like, right? How our memory is. And I think this person goes from point A to point B, right, and doesn't spend a lot of time in the middle or in between things, right? Oh, and here's the Golden West. This is where Steve lives.
What is the Golden West?
It is probably one of the last affordable housing, SRO, single resident occupant buildings in downtown. I think actually the disappearance of SRO as a model is probably connected.
Julie, you guys are long-time respected experts in the real estate market here in downtown and really the region. And you and Greg have so much experience and I've seen downtown at different levels and different exposure. Taking that, as you look at a project like this, what are we going to do, but also what can we do to also help grow downtown from real estate, residential, community building?
It's a great question, and I can tell you as a resident here of 20 years, we are excited to see what has been done, the talent that you're bringing here, and the lifestyle opportunities, you helping us keep our community clean to keep our values up.
I have a riddle for you.
Yes. Got you. Yeah.
If you think a thought, what did you think?
A thoughtlet.
A thought. Exactly. That is the answer.
Now, some jokes that you may like to have in your repertoire. What is the difference between a turkey and a chicken?
What is it?
Well, when you can sit down to have your turkey meal, people will say, well, who wants... I'll make it easier. The turkey is always ready to join the band. Why? What musical instrument could he play?
I don't know. I'm not clever enough. It's all you.
Okay, all right. Well, the answer is a drumstick. He always has a drumstick. And you know, the difference... And then the drumstick, even though technically the chicken drumstick is a drumstick, they always say, who wants the legs? Don't ask me why, but that's a pretty foul joke.
I actually wanted to come up and share a little bit of news regarding a park that's in development right now. And it's the one in front of Horton Plaza. And specifically, Horton Plaza is being redeveloped, as many of you know. And several years back, Jim talked to me about the civil rights activism that happened in Horton Plaza. So I started pitching developers. I work for the Building Trades Council, so I represent unions. And I started pitching the developers that were thinking about redeveloping Horton Plaza on the notion of doing a monument to those civil rights activists and the soapboxes by putting up a bronze soapbox out there. And I just got word a few weeks ago that the developer Stockdale is going to do it.
I love it.
So I just want you to know.
Thank you, Carol.
And they did say to me, you know, we'd like you to help us fundraise for this. And I'm like, all right, I'm all over it. But I wanted you to know.
This podcast is brought to you by the Digital Salon Editorial Board. Danielle Gonzalez, Rebecca Smith, Olivia Arena, and Dawa Tikin, in conjunction with UCLA's City Lab and Urban Humanities Initiative. We would like to thank Gus Wendell, Jacqueline Barrios, Dana Cuff, Gustavo Leclerc, Rain Laborde Ruiz, Martin Brennan, and everyone else who made this podcast possible. We would also like to thank our peer reviewers for their time and dedication, Charles Livermore, M. Marinoff, Jacqueline Barrios, Mario Ceballos, Shane Rayner Roth, and those who wish to remain anonymous. Thanks for listening to the Digital Salon Podcast. New episodes are released every Thursday. We hope to see you then.